Welcome back to Switchcast Live. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. If it ain't true, it better be funny. Both is okay, too. With me tonight, a recurring guest now is my friend Tim Neely of Tim's Enthusiast Garage. He is almost as much of a car expert as I am.
Oh, what a kind, kind thing to say.
Cheers.
But also
cheers,
slightly
Doug.
Cutting. Like, not cheers, quite yeah, there. Right. He's like, you're good.
Yes. We have banter here on the podcast. So we're going to do a fair amount of Q&A tonight. We've got a few great questions that came in through the switchcast.live and social media about the car business. Tim is a veteran of all arenas of the car industry.
That's true.
Service, detailing, car shows, sales, YouTubing, the whole deal. So he's going to lend a little bit different and probably better perspective than I will, because you're all tired of hearing my perspective. It's the same all the time, except when I change it up just to mess with you. And our producer, Ethan Huffnagel, is on vacation this week. So Tyler Sanders is sitting in both producer and banterer.
And he is stressing.
Let's be kind. My face is not. I'm doing all right. I got
sweat.
This under control.
So if you got any killer questions, throw them in wherever you are watching live, and we'll do our best to address them throughout the show. Tim, you want people to subscribe to your automotive YouTube channel. You've got a quite eclectic collection.
I do.
Which is increased by one tonight. He's taking home an Aston Martin DB7 Vantage V12 with a 6-speed manual, unless you look at the Aston Martin Heritage Trust Certificate where it says it's a 5-speed manual.
That piece of paperwork is like, because you know if I post it ever for sale, that's going to be like, well, what? It says 5-speed and that's from Aston Martin.
Right.
The original owner had to leave a gear at the factory for that interior spec. They had to make sacrifices to get that the way it is.
Worth it.
Second gear is shot, so it's
worth
fine.
It. Yeah. Worth it.
There's six numbers on the shifter, but don't try number two.
Anyway, that's a car I've been pushing for a while, both the DB7 and the DB9. There's this whole big craze. People ask, well, what's the next big thing? You know, copyright rights, all rights reserved, Magnus Walker, I think. But
yeah.
You know, people want to talk about cars as investments, but nobody wants to start investing in cars before anybody else does. So it's really just they want to ride the wave once the surf is already broken,
yeah,
which is too late. So
get a DB9 or a DB7.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you on it. I think
yeah, I have really a DB9 are. Manual. Tim has a DB7 manual, and yeah, I think they're great, great cars. And good future potential, but cars aren't investments, period. But anyway, Tim walks softly and carries a big stick, which is frustrating for our producer because he's trying to get him to speak into the mic.
Yeah.
But the analogy
speak
is
into the mic.
True.
Check.
The things he does have to say are pretty, he's got some zingers. There's a lot of mic drops.
I'm going to deliver some just spicy mic drops over the next hour.
Speaking of delivery, in the news this week, United States Postal Service will purchase 6 battery electric canoe vehicles to evaluate for future fleet use, which I think is certainly interesting. You know, short range, close to home. Charge them every night. That seems to be a fairly ideal use for EVs. But I also learned that the internet doesn't have a sense of humor, because in response to this article, I said that, wow, well, you know, if those vehicles break, then they'll be up a creek without a paddle.
Canoe. Canoe. That's a big mic drop.
Yeah. And the first response was some curmudgeon that was like, just because you don't know how to fix one, bud, doesn't mean no one would.
Yeah.
So that was
you can't transgress the EV community, Doug.
I feel like EV community doesn't use the word bud, though. That's a internal combustion curmudgeon.
That could have been a postal worker.
Oh,
some real thin ice.
Those unions. Man, don't mess with them.
Coming for you.
Yikes. Anyway, Speaking of in more postal news, too, this week on Fox8.com, we read this article that a postal worker out in Western Ohio was ticketed for allegedly racing a Ford Mustang. That's right. They both passed the sheriff at triple digit speeds, and the postal worker got pulled over. The sheriff said that he paced this lady at 105 miles an hour.
Whoa, is it in one of the normal mail trucks?
Well, I don't think it was in the Grumman one, because they've been using the Ford Transit vans or the Mini Transit. What's the smaller ones called?
Yeah. The city one.
Because I feel like the Grumman would just like fall apart at 50.
Still 105.
105. Now, well, pacing is a highly unreliable method of speed enforcement. So she could fight this in court. But he clocked the Mustang, I think, at 100 and then saw her going even faster. So I'm guessing she won, right? I mean, we definitely want to know if a Mustang got beat by a postal delivery truck.
Did the Mustang crash? That's the question.
Possibly.
I had to have. Right?
I mean, yeah. But, you know, what the sheriff should have said when he came up to her window. Man, you are really hauling the mail.
I love Doug's face when he makes those jokes.
Wow. I mean,
was not scripted.
Are you going to punish this? You had one earlier in the text thread, too.
I did?
Puns all day.
Oh, it's great.
I mean, 4 days.
Here's the interesting thing about this. Well, there's a lot interesting about this. The driver has had her license suspended previously 3 times, and it was only reinstated 2 years ago. Multiple prior speeding convictions.
At what point do you just take it away?
Hey, good enough for government work.
Right?
No one saw that. No one.
But it's true. If I tried to hire somebody for an exclusively driving job.
Dude, your insurance, there's no way.
No.
They'd be like,
no.
Next.
Not happening.
Right. I know.
I have a friend who's excluded from my policy, and his license has never been suspended. He just has too many tickets. 3 suspensions? Only the government can pull this off.
That is wild.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, if you're convicted of felonies and, you know, government work still on the table.
Speaking of females... Do you like my transitions?
I feel like that was a bit of a reach.
Go.
Natalie
Decker.
Oh, Tim, I think there's somebody at the door for you.
Yeah.
I think you need to...
Man.
Natalie Decker announced her new partnership with Bikini Zone. Do you know who Natalie Decker is?
I do. The NASCAR... actually,
Xfinity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The feeder races. Feeder.
She hopes to someday...
All due respect to Jeffrey Earnhardt. He's our guy in Xfinity. But I didn't know who she was. But apparently this is big news. And I looked up her race results on the NASCAR Xfinity Series website. And she's been racing about 4 years. She does about 3 to 5 races per year. And let's just say this. I wish I could be as bad at racing as she is and get sponsored by Speedo.
Bro, like I know. The sponsorship thing, when you sent me this article, sponsorship makes no sense to me because the people that deserve it at least get the sponsorship. I don't know how it happens, but somehow it
Are
happens.
You anti-females in racing,
no,
Tim?
No, but I'm anti, like, I know.
Are you saying that she deserves
I'm
it
I'm saying
the
least? I work hard to get some sponsors. Well, yeah, I mean, potentially. Although Bikini Zone, I mean, how many options? They don't have that many options. You're not going to get Bikini Zone sponsorship.
Look, the Bikini Zone
could,
money.
Though.
I mean, well, I yes, could. You could now. Yeah.
I feel like it's...
Potentially.
Somebody's going to be accuse me of being misogynist here. Misogynistic? Which one is it?
I think it's misogynistic.
Misogynite?
Both. Yeah. All three.
Misogynitis is when you have a disease where you can't stop being chauvinistic. Anyway. Yeah, if I went out and raced and finished mostly last, this is not in the script.
Right. No, I know.
If I finished, I probably should have stuck to the script. If I finished mostly last all the time, I would like a sponsorship.
I know, man. It breaks my heart.
To look sexy.
I know. I would give you a sponsorship. Not Bikini Zone, but...
Look, their money is just as green as everybody else's.
I don't know. It's Danica Patrick all over again.
It is Danica Patrick all over
again. I don't want to go down that road.
And if she doesn't get off the F1 commentary thing, it ruins every weekend when she's on the F1 commentary. Have you seen the outtakes of that?
No.
It is truly cringeworthy. They got her with Jenson Button, and Jenson Button's just like, you can see him just holding it back, like trying to deal.
All he needs to say is, what races have you won?
You know, she was on a podcast recently and said that they asked what kind of cars, like in your daily life, like what are you passionate about? What kind of cars do you have? She's like, I'm not a car person. What? So they pushed it, and they're like, what do you mean you're not a car person? She's like, I can drive cars fast. That's what I do.
But she can't.
But she doesn't
really have
any. It's just, you know, I'm not going to comment on that. But she has zero, like, she has zero, like, collector cars. Zero, like, interest in, like, she never was, like, GTI or GT3 or that none of that.
So then I wonder, how did she get started? Like, what got her into being?
Bikini Zone.
Oh,
Bikini Zone did.
Call comes.
We're treading
circle.
On dangerous
we're
footing
we're
here.
Definitely.
Let's.
What
wrap,
else is in the news?
Let's
talk?
Wrap this up with. I would love to see a female dominate a racing series because she wins. That would be great.
Absolutely.
That
Absolutely.
Would be great. Yep. Okay. I got a tip this week from a former employee at Carvana. Since we talk about them pretty much every week.
Is still there. Weren't you like they were definitely going to go out of business like 6 months ago?
I'm still saying we should short them, but 121 is their stock price today.
I wasn't on the stock price update this week. Shirking my responsibilities there.
They have recently removed the trash cans at the headquarters in Tempe, Arizona to save money on trash removal. Whoa. Any guesses what their monthly garbage disposal bill was?
Oh, I don't even know how much that normally costs.
Well, our dumpster out back is $85 a month.
How many employees do they have?
Good question.
I can't make a
Could
guess.
Be making a lot of trash. I don't know, $500 a month.
$20,000.
For what?
$20,000
a month?
They got a lot of papers to shred.
I was going to say, are they getting rid of some important stuff?
Probably.
A month?
That's, Peanut that Geller says weird. They're getting rid of evidence.
Wow, sure, dude. A month? That's like, that can't be.
I think we need to rename them Carvenron.
Was that in the script?
No.
Man.
Tim is so skeptical.
There's so many singers.
Look.
I got nothing. I got nothing for you.
All right. One more piece of news, and then we'll go to a commercial, and then we can come to the questions that you were prepped on. So,
I know I got one
you
zinger.
You got one,
and
you
I'm like really trying hard. Where do I deliver this zinger? I gotta
fit it in.
I
somewhere.
Really gotta get it in. There.
Like a postal worker, you're struggling with the delivery.
Yeah. this is one of us is getting canceled. There's no way. And the crazy thing is I saw the prep. I should have seen in the prep how bad this could go.
How good it could go. This has gone all sorts of viral this week. Toyota GR Corolla or Corolla GR. Is it like a neon SRT where you can't call it a neon? You just call it a Toyota GR?
I think no, it's because there's like other GRs.
Yeah. So the owner, the driver, did a money shift, went into third instead of fifth, melted a piston, and the quote for a new engine was $42,000.
Does it also come with a car?
Well, that's the thing. The sticker price on a new GR, if you could buy one at sticker, which you can, but the sticker price is $41,000. Huh.
Three cylinders. So. There's three tiny cylinders.
Yeah.
Maybe they just have none. But it's been out for like 2 years in the Yaris, the GR Yaris.
Yeah.
That blows wild. My mind. They just didn't want to do it. They just didn't want to do it.
Tyler gets a rim shot.
These guys.
We're 2 for 3.
There's another script here that I don't have. What? I don't have it.
You're like the third cylinder in the Corolla.
I'm the one that got melted.
Amazing.
That was nice.
Tim's never coming back after this.
It's been a good run, guys. It's been a good run.
No, Tim really does have a lot of expertise and some great, great jokes. So we'll send your questions in to Tim. I promise I will stay silent and just
let
Tim answer
them. It was not this spicy the last couple times.
Oh, man.
The bourbon's flowing. Something.
Anyway, so Toyota will not warranty this because they claim it is driver error, which I'm no lawyer, but I feel like they have a leg to stand on there. So... You're looking at me like I'm going to make a joke. Like, no.
No, there's no joke there.
They'd have two legs if they weren't. I know. Yeah. But I found it ironic that in the Porsche world, buyers and sellers obsess over over-rev reports and the number of ignitions that have been over redline. And yet I've seen a dozen or more Porsches with hard money shifts with no engine damage. And then you have Toyota over here where it's like one, boom.
Well, you could probably, I mean, a Porsche, you know, you got to think the valve springs, everything's designed for, you know, just all day, beat on the car. So you throw a 9,000 RPM at it, it's probably like, okay, you get one, two. But the Corolla, I mean, that thing's, it's on the edge, right? You know what I mean? Like,
it's wound out already.
It's
a very low red line, 6,500 RPM.
Yeah, and
that's like a Mustang.
It's all boost. I mean, that thing is all boost. I mean,
is
it's
it like pushrod too? Is that why I can't rev fire? Like little tiny pushrods?
I don't know. That does make sense. Though, that it's boosted.
It's not pushrods.
Yeah. Lower compression ratio, lower revs. All right, let's pay for this podcast before they stop sending checks in.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio. They serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with a single purpose, to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy, in fact, that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. And head on over to switchcars.com/Boxcast for your free trial. And also, I could set it up tonight with a lot of Ethan's help, so I think Boxcast is pretty easy. Well, hey, Hank, how you doing?
Not too bad, Tyler. Too how bad. Are you?
He does, Tim, he kind of sneaks in, doesn't he?
Where did Comes Hank come from?
Hank, do you
That's
remember
That's a
Tim?
Fancy watch. Why is it square?
Yeah, it's an homage to Mr. McQueen, Steve McQueen.
Oh, yeah.
He drove Mustangs.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
That's bad. Sorry.
He was a pretty good actor, but I don't know about that Ford
That's
he drove.
Generous. That's generous, Hank.
So, Hank, I've got some news here for you.
Okay.
It looks like...
You read the newspaper, too?
Sometimes I do. Yeah.
Did Hank get mail?
Yeah, Hank has a package. Really? So this came for you. This comes to us from the Anti-Clibbins Club.
What's that?
I think, you know when folks are driving motorcycles and they don't... And grass clippings get on the road and it can cause you to get a little squirrely and crash?
No, I suppose so. They're probably driving too fast, though.
Yeah, I think that's the Clibbins they're talking about, is like the grass clippings on the road. You
gotcha.
Do you think it'd make your Corvettes, spin out or anything like that if you drove over them?
Well, heck no, because I don't drive fast.
Oh, that's true. You'd be real careful.
Those motorcycles, they're crazy, friggin' weaving in and out of traffic, and then they complain when they get hit.
You make some points, for sure. We got some mail, and I didn't open it, so I figured you could give it a shot on the podcast tonight.
Live on air.
Oh, boy.
So let's see what somebody sent.
Is it a car cover?
It'd have to be for a really small car.
Yep, I suppose so.
Nissan,
well, I got fitted car covers for my model cars as well. I had a model
really?
Car built to match my actual Corvette, and I got a cover for it. Don't want to get the dust on it. No, it's a T-shirt. Extra large. Who do they think I am?
That's right. You're not of a terribly
goodness
large
gracious.
Thank you for the shirt.
Bigum Block Chevy. Chevy. This person doesn't know how to spell.
Is it all misspelled?
It's all misspelled. This friggin' must have been a 20-year-old or something that sent this in.
There's multiple shirts.
They probably texted it on their phone or something and, you know, ordered it from the Amazon and couldn't get it spell checked right. Oh, there's a large. Okay. They're getting closer.
they're what,
they
there.
Think I have a beer gut or something?
There's one for all. We all win.
I think so. We all win.
Oh, it's got something on the back.
Corbettes.
Corbettes and New Balances. Still can't spell.
Hold it up
says bottom hand. Text on the...
this is incredible. Yeah, so we've got instead of cars and coffee, we've got Corbettes and New Balances from the Bigum Block Chevy Club. So yeah, these are pretty
Who
sweet.
Who is this actually from?
It was on the pretty it's from the anti-club.
I'm not sure if
club.
They're trying to make fun of me, if they're just idiots that can't spell. What is public school getting to nowadays anyway? Goodness.
Well, thank you to whoever that was from the anti-Clibbins Club that sent that on to Hank. We promise he appreciates it, and so do we. It'll be great. We're going to wear that to the next Cars and Coffee. Anywho, Hank, in other news, I've got something related to someone purchasing a new Corvette C8 for you.
Okay.
So this
Why is that news? They made tens of thousands of them.
They did, but this one has a bit of an interesting situation with the dealer.
Oh, okay. Did the dealer try to rip them off and charge them over sticker?
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah.
That baffles me.
It's pretty crazy. I think they might be making so many of them now that they're just not worth that much over sticker. Do you think?
Probably.
Okay. What if
I've been waiting for them greedy dealers to friggin' take it in the shorts once they came down to sticker.
Well, they might be. So this situation, the person says, I signed paperwork about a week ago and was sold a C8 that had 2 miles on it when it's delivered.
Perfect.
And then when it was delivered to them, it had 96 miles and a bunch of scratches and was filthy inside.
Well, how in the world would that happen?
Well, they asked what the hell happened, sorry about my language, with the mileage, and the salesman told me that the car was taken home by the GM of the dealer and drove it around town after they signed the paperwork.
That is unacceptable.
Yeah, this is wild.
They probably drove it in the rain, too.
And it had scratches on it.
He probably took it through an automatic car wash to try to cover up his sins.
Cover up his sins. Yeah,
I don't think that man goes to church. He should not be driving somebody else's car.
Yeah, that's rude, honestly.
You know how you prevent that, though?
How do you prevent that?
I prevented that. I took Corvette Museum delivery. Don't get any Yahoo friggin' salesman rip off general managers hauling your car around thinking it's theirs for the weekend, showboating and trying to impress their girlfriend. You know, it's at the museum. It's in the row there. And you get a volunteer at the museum who's typically a Corvette Club member, and they take good care of it. And they told me that mine was the best one they had delivered that week. I don't know if I've told you that.
No, but, I don't think so.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive. They must have seen a lot.
$1,400.
Well, it wasn't when I got it.
Shocking.
Well, that's at least a quarter of the price of the car nowadays. Oh, Hank is not happy.
Hank's triggered.
Anyway, so this person says they're absolutely livid, been dreaming of this day their whole life and saving their whole life to buy a brand new Corvette, and they feel like it's all been ruined. Should have been a good day, but it was terrible. I feel like I've been violated and my car is now used. Any advice on what I should do?
Yep. You should order a new one straight from GM and take delivery at the museum. Shove that dealer. Tell him to shove it where the sun don't shine and rip up that contract and leave him some reviews, you know, on the interwebs and tell everybody what you think. Yeah. They shouldn't be allowed to put up with that.
1 star on Goggle.
What's Goggle?
That's what the
Hank. Oh, gotcha. Oh, I gotcha.
Hank joke.
Pick it up, put your butt down. See, that's why I didn't get it. Well, anyway.
I use MSN.
Well, thanks for coming down again, Hank. Tim, did you have any questions for Hank while we're here?
Afraid.
You're afraid? I understand. You guys can chat. Did you know that Tim sold his Corvette that he had?
I think I heard that last time. I lost a lot of respect for him.
But he might buy another one. He's got the itch. He misses it.
On a C8. Z06.
No, you're one of those, huh? Got too much money. Yeah,
well. All right, Hank. Well, thanks for coming down again. And everybody, that was the
Thank you, too, I think.
Brought to you unwittingly by the Corvette Buy Sell Trade Group on Facebook. That is your source for cranky boomers, overpriced Corvettes, and reinforced stereotypes. And boy, while, you don't need to be afraid.
I'm telling you, if you have not seen the Hank video at Amelia Island, is that where that the one is? The one with the 918?
Yeah.
I can't believe you can even do that character and stay, because the looks that they're shooting.
What are you talking about?
Oh, man.
Character.
Yeah. Hank? Okay. I'm
Hold
sorry.
On. There's a note.
Oh, was there really?
The shirts. Oh. Anti-Clibbins Club. Congratulations, Haas. User now certified member of Anti-Clibbins Club. Keep cranking gobbers.
Gobbers? Is it gobbles?
No, gobbers.
Is there an R?
Nope. It's gobbers.
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 Huh.
Sounds like a candy.
The shirt is pretty cool.
Yeah, what
and
different
there's
size?
An XL, so
I guess you're going home.
Medium. Medium. Winner.
Tim's like, I got this.
All right, let's go to questions. We've got some good ones in the hopper.
Yes, so we're going to start out with some questions of the week, which, as always, are brought to you by Nuts for Sticks. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all of its forms. So forget the flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick theme shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That is nutsforsticks.com and code SWITCHCAST. Speaking of SwitchCast and SwitchCast.live, which is your place for all SwitchCast things and the best way to get questions into Doug here on the podcast. This one comes from Shannon K., which is, I believe, a longtime listener, and I think we've answered some of their questions before. But Doug, they want to know, has Doug ever told the story of how he became a specialty car dealer? Did he work at a traditional dealership, work at an enthusiast or exotic dealership, or just start buying and selling cars and eventually took the plunge and got a dealer's license? Really enjoy the podcast each week. And so, yeah, long time. And I think I have another question from them later.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. I think Tim and I should both answer this.
Yeah.
We covered it a bit on your first time on the show, but it's always a good rundown of how we ended up here. That's what people always want to know. Like, how do you get to be around cars all the time? My short, smart ass answer is that nothing else worked. Which is partially true. I dropped out of college, decided engineering wasn't for me, or I wasn't for engineering, and went into business with a friend, and neither of those were real things. Wasn't a real business, wasn't a real friend. So lost my shirt on that, got a job at a Land Rover dealership when I was, I think, 19, to get my feet back on the ground. Was super excited because I was applying for any job. Like, I was applying for third shift friggin' police dispatcher. I'm glad I didn't go down that career really track. Really? I went into a job interview that was somewhere in like Parma or something in this rented office building with no name on the door. And I went into this interview with a guy who looked like a washed up used car salesman, starched shirt and, you know, just waiting to grab the cigarette, you know, after the interview in this office that looked like they had just set it up that morning. And he interviewed me and towards the end starts like complimenting me like, yep, I think you'd be a great fit. Like you know, you've got personal skills, you've got all these different things. You know, we'd like to have you join the team. And at that moment, I realized that I had no clue what the job was. And I was like, I think I just got hired to do door-to-door vacuum sales. Mm. And I'm like, no, I'm out. Because it was just one of these, like, generic ads in the wow. job classifieds. Anyway, so yeah, thankfully I landed a job at the Land Rover dealership who decided to give me a chance, and I did not let them down. That has its own book of stories in and of itself, but I didn't enjoy the politics of working at a dealership. So I quit and said I can do it better. Ha ha ha. Boy, was I an idiot. And just started brokering cars on my own. Got a website, used some Google AdWords, started flipping allocations and basically just helping people find cars and get the proper deal on new cars. And then it just kind of evolved from there to a bunch of different iterations of the business until I figured out my niche and what I was actually doing. Somehow only went broke once in that period. But yeah, so I've been broke twice, but around about 2012, I kind of like restarted and just said, okay, I'm just going to buy and sell cars. I'm not going to try to do anything fancy because I had an entrepreneurial mindset. So I was always trying to reinvent the wheel, change the car industry, do something great. And I had some really good ideas. I just had no idea how to execute them. And in hindsight, I had some ideas that are now changing the automotive industry. And I had those ideas before they were a thing, but I was like 20 years old. Right. I didn't know how to make them happen. So yeah, I can't regret it because it wasn't anything I tried and failed at. I was just like, well, I got this idea and I wrote the business plan. I'm like, oh, what do I do with this? So it's, you know, yes, I'm just a used car dealer now, but it's been the most refreshing thing in a sense because it forced me to learn how to just run a business and not be this pie in the sky, crazy idea person that, because you can die on the side of the road
with great ideas.
Yeah, right? Sure. Like all the inventors and writers and stuff that go crazy because their head's full of ideas and they're brilliant, but they can't, you know, they can't finish a task or something like that. And I struggle with that, not being brilliant, but not being able to finish a task was my thing. I couldn't bring something to, you know, the finish line. So yeah, it's been 12 years and we're still selling cars and just trying to do it a little bit better every year. And I've slowly started going back into like, okay, I've got some ideas now. I'm going to slowly work these out and see if I can, you know, use that crazy headspace and do some other stuff also. But anyway, Tim, your background.
I like it.
How'd you get it?
Yeah, well, I was in music actually. And me, yeah, let me get closer to the mic because it's a proximity thing. I was, I had done other things and I was in the music industry and it was definitely keeping me away from the hours. I've done music for years and it's hard to be successful in music without like really, really dedicating your entire life, like to open to close.
I thought you were a drummer.
Right. Yeah. I am.
Well, you said you were in music.
Right. Yeah. But I have vocal performances and production. So anyways, I got out of that and, I had always like had a kind of a side hustle of like selling a car here or there and a car here or there. And then I opened a proper car dealership with a friend who actually was a friend. He was very helpful. His name's James Bentley, in the odd chance that he would be listening. But he was only briefly in the car business, but he was a great like entrepreneur, and he was into like helping other entrepreneurs sort of realize their dreams. And I think all along the way, you mentioned, you know, that sort of the wisdom that comes with age. I think I'm always shocked when I hear someone that's 25, you know, or 26, and they're killing it, because at 25 or 26, I was still juggling ideas. I was still sort of not, you know, really on to the right direction of doing things. But so I had never sold cars before professionally, but I kind of knew who I would want to buy a car from. And I kind of knew the kind of cars that I would like to buy. And so I started doing that. You know, I got into Manheim and, you know, started selling cars there, getting cars there, taking trades. And it was almost all Highline stuff. And I did that for years and years. And it's always kind of either been my main thing or a thing. And, I've met a lot of great people like John over the years. There's a guy in here right now named John. He's also a flipper kind of guy like that. And, I think we just, that's how it started for me, is I recognized that I had a passion and pursued that. And with some good business sense from outside, I grew some business sense. Now it's more like I'll help people get like the car that they're looking for, because it's usually very specific, exotic or something. And I list cars for people on Bring a Trailer and stuff. So I don't really sell as definitely nowhere near like what Doug does currently, but it's always something that I do on a hobby level. So
you're a boutique specialist.
Boutique specialist.
Yes.
Ooh, that sounds fancy.
It's much better than what I just
I mean,
said.
Look at his shirt. It is fancy.
This shirt, I'd just like to point out.
And
this
not
shirt,
at all similar to one that he wore previously.
This shirt is not the same shirt I wore last time. This is a different shirt. That was a pink shirt. This is like a peach.
Salmon-y.
That is kind of this pink adjacent.
It was really, really similar. I was driving here. I'm like, oh my gosh.
So I think that transitions well, not pink shirts, but into the next question of the week about.
Yes, we
maybe
have three
getting into the car
week.
Business.
Yeah. So the next one comes from Carter E. on, I think, Instagram or Facebook. Hey, Doug and Tim. I absolutely love your videos, both on Switch Cars and your stories on VinWiki. I was wondering if you
and
could...
on Tim's Enthusiast Garage.
Yeah.
Ooh. Subscribe.
If you could give some tips, tricks, or advice to someone looking to become a car broker in 2024. I just started my first salaried job as a tax accountant in January, and I'm looking at using this new income to invest in a way to make it grow both in the short and long term. I'm located in Iowa, and I've looked into licenses, and the fees are very cheap. I also just recently got access to an 8,000-square-foot warehouse that I could use for storage. I would prefer to deal more in allocation sales in order to deal with less shipping headaches, but I would be willing to hold and sell from the warehouse as well. And if you have any opinions on either, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
One, everybody would prefer to deal in allocation sales. I can make money and never touch the car? That's a saturated market, and it's been very much closed off. I don't want to say... I saw it coming, but I did see the writing on the wall back in 2008-09. I mean, heck, Porsche shut me down, and then they instituted the VIP program. So, well, they sort of shut it down. They just created a whole new class of flippers. They just – anyway, another topic for another day. That but, is. Yeah, allocation sales is not an easy thing to get into now because everybody's trying to do it because it's so easy. So let's address the other – thing of trying to make your money grow both in the short and the long term.
While you're pondering, I feel like I don't want to besmirch the question because we love our listeners and love the interaction. A lot of it is, I would like the best of both worlds all the time.
Well,
short, long term, not deal with car shipping.
The red flag in there was like the fees are cheap. The problem is, you know, price out garage policies, price out like, talk to, you know, really, like when you look at, you know, your cost, when what goes into your cost, because like all these cars, for example, if he buys some cars to sell, even if he's flipping them quick, say he's flipping them all in 20 to 40 days, like batteries, you know, the amount of things that break, particularly on high-end cars from sitting. I mean, you know, even part of me driving here to pick up this V12 that I bought 4 months ago, you know, I'm like, please let it run. You know what I mean? Just because like there's so much stuff that can happen that when you say like, well, the costs just sort of come out of nowhere, you know, whether it's insurance or whether it's, you know, what it costs to service the cars, because there's a lot of hidden costs. I would say that.
Yeah.
Because I was real
the law of entropy applies.
For sure. For sure.
Order tends to disorder. Sorry, evolutionists. But just in general, that's.
You aren't?
Anyway.
Okay,
off camera.
He got you. All right.
We've got Peanut Gallery here. Anyway.
Peanut Gallery is being very distracting to our guests.
No, the law of entropy very much applies to cars. So you have to quick flip them. So. Short term, yeah, let's talk about that investment. Although as a tax accountant, you should be able to crunch the numbers and realize very quickly that it is not the best use of your money. Everybody in the car business, for the most part, at least in this arena of the car business, the high-end car business, is somewhat operating under the guise of the principle of how to make a small fortune in the car business. Investment. Start with a large fortune
all the time. Exactly.
If you do it right, if you have a good niche, if you figure out what you're good at within the car business, then you can make it work. And that's what I've always told people is just figure out something that you're better at, some corner of the market that you know better than everybody else, such that you can have some good margins and not get totally burnt, because you can really, really easily get burnt in this business if you don't know more than the next guy. Long term, come on, man, you're a tax accountant. Long term investments are 401ks and Roth IRAs and
I feel like I got mutual funds. I think my zinger might apply here. We were talking about this a little bit beforehand, and everyone looks at like you or people, they assume because I have, you know, like 20 cars that I'm just like fabulously wealthy. And I tell them I drive my 401k, but it's also, it's not that it's like going up in value like a 401k, because compound interest doesn't rust.
There it is.
That's not a drum rim shot. That's a mic drop. We'll just simulate it.
But I just think there's so much that goes into this. If you figure out, you know, with him, it's like, was Porsche GT3s and like very, very specific kind of thing. For me, it was, you know, like oddball. I like oddball, limited production, weirdo European stuff. That was always kind of my thing. And you can, you know, double your money on a car from time to time. It can happen, but it is not the norm. You know, typically it's like, oh, I, you know, made $1,500 on that $100,000 car, because after you factor in all the stuff, there is nowhere that it rains money, including in this business.
I have a good illustration to that effect. I took in a terrible BMW 3 Series convertible one time, and I had a black Porsche GT3 RS, and I sold them both right about like maybe the same day, and I doubled my money on one, and I made $1,000 on the other one. Yeah, I doubled my money on the BMW 3 Series that I paid $1,500 for. I made more actual money on the $1,500 car than I did on the $120,000 car. So it can be brutal. The car business is a cruel mistress. You should always start with cash. Because the worst thing in the world to do is lose money that you don't have. I've done it twice. It sucks.
Preach.
It's way worse than losing money that you have. But if you start with money that you have, you also know what it took to get it, so it doesn't flow out of your hands as easily. So you're going to make better and smarter buys. And you're going to be a lot more shrewd when you go to invest in a certain car. You're going to likely count the cost, unless you just happen to be really good at making money at your job and awesome, better plan, at spending it.
A floor plan is very expensive. And there's also this, like, I don't know what it is, but every time I've had a floor plan, currently I don't operate on a floor plan. I just operate on cash. But when you operate on a floor plan, there's this like, I don't know. You just know that there's 150 or 300,000 or whatever it is open, and you see a car that's like kind of a good deal that like normally it wouldn't you wouldn't buy it, because like you wouldn't, whatever that metric is that you put on the car, like I think I can get X for this. This is like you can get Y. Like it's not as good as X, but it's like, and you just end up with six or seven cars that you're maybe not even that passionate about. The money's not quite right. And, you know, especially coming into this season that we're in the car business, because the last 2 years was such a, you know, it was wild because stuff didn't depreciate, you know, like especially new limited edition stuff, you know, was like, I bought it for 160. Now it's worth 200. But now that same car is rapidly deteriorating and rapidly, you know, depreciating.
I wonder if it's any coincidence that the Exotic Car Hacks guy is all of a sudden transitioned to pushing luxury watch flipping.
Right.
Because his principles don't work when the cars are depreciating, period.
And I never made money on the cars that you really like, especially like the clout cars and coffee. We live in this like clout, you know, like SVJ and Senna and all these like
Instagram super, handle sticker on your window.
Exactly. Super high end. You know, none of those cars have I ever made money on. I mean, maybe once did I buy a car that was like the it car, and they just depreciate and they're a huge outlay. You know, it's like you said $1,500 and you made $1,500 on it. That's you do the exact same thing. That's what you should do. Most people don't want to flip $1,500 cars. You know,
because it's not glamorous.
It's not glamorous.
There's a saying that applies. Sell to the classes, eat with the masses. Sell to the masses, eat with the classes.
Yeah, that's a great one. And it's a totally true axiom. So this guy's dreams are now dashed on the game. But I just
think that's the point that anytime anyone asks me this, I try to dash their dreams, because if they can make it past that and go, no, here's my business plan. This is why I'm going to be good at it. This is why I want to do it. Okay, great.
And you might.
Yeah.
But you got to be realistic, and the fees come out of nowhere. You know, the fee that you think it is, there's your city's going to want you to have a smaller sign or not want you to. I mean, they're just owning a business becomes so much more complex than you ever think it would be.
This gives me a brilliant idea.
Okay.
Because every one of my clients wants to be in the car business. They don't actually, they just want a dealer tag to avoid sales tax and think that they can not lose money and whatever. I should use the Paul Mitchell model that they do for salons, where instead of like owning the salon and having employees, they just rent chairs. I should just get a friggin' warehouse and rent dealer licenses. Let like 40 people underneath me pay me money to pretend like they know what they're doing.
He won't do that, state
in
of
the
Ohio.
Car business.
State of Ohio, he has no intention of actually doing that.
This is not
in a different state. I should do this in a different state.
Georgia.
That is a great idea. But not, of course, not in the state of Ohio.
Yeah,
that's right. Aren't people from New York getting Georgia dealer licenses with like no name LLCs in a? Yes.
Yeah, but we don't.
They're going to shut that down quickly, though.
Yeah, I don't think that's
because there's like stolen cars running around New York City on Georgia dealer tags.
It's still. I think Georgia. It's bill of like if you have a bill of sale from Georgia, that's all you need, right? It's something wild like that.
That is kind of crazy.
It's totally
crazy. Well, Georgia does the bonded titles. So if you have a bill of sale, you can get a bonded title, which is essentially ownership enough to get it plated. And if nobody claims ownership for, I think, 2 years, then you can get a regular title. So you can't sell it, but you can own it with a fabricated bill of sale.
Yikes.
Allegedly fabricated bill of sale.
Yeah. Ooh, that was good.
That was kind of a zinger.
Ooh,
I'm trying to keep track here.
Oh, man.
Alrighty. Next question of the week.
Yes, go for it.
This comes from MT3030. Hi, Doug. My name is Matt, and I have a question, and maybe you can help me out. First off, love your videos, especially the Lamborghini car, and my Corvette is best Corvette. I'm a 40-year-old electrician and have always loved the Porsche 911. Good taste. What advice can you give me to help me achieve my goal of owning one someday? Any and all advice is appreciated.
Hook up the wires the right way and don't burn houses down.
Keep electricianing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's a great career. I don't know how much you make or where you're at or what your personal finances are or how many kids you have or whatever, but, yeah, 911s can be pretty cheap to get into. You can get a bad 996 for $25,000. I feel like anyone with a decent career can attain one of those.
Confirm.
What's that? Can confirm. Tyler. Tyler's got a good career. He's got
a good 996.
He's got a good 996 in a very rare color. I mean, work hard, be smart about it, save up cash. Put it aside, make sure your other financial obligations are taken care of, retirement, et cetera, your family's taken care of, put away money for kids' college. But, you know, kind of everything in moderation. You don't have to do all of it at once, but yeah, I do your homework, do your research, watch the market, educate yourself on it, know what you're looking for, know what the deals are, know why some cars are cheaper than others, and then find a trustworthy dealer like Switch Cars and just pull the trigger.
The only thing I'd add to this and that's helped me is, you know, I came from no money, so that question resonated with me because I used to think, like, how am I ever going to get the Lotus Esprit was my target, and I wanted to have a Lotus Esprit that by the time I was 25, and so I, you know, I started saving, and I did, like, you do mental math. I think set a date, set a target, and that's has always been helpful to me. With that target, I had one, you know, that happened for me. So target acquisition, I think, is, you know, is a good thing because you will sure. do what it takes. You will save the money. You will realize, I'm so far. If your goal is 2 years, you get a year down the road and you've only got 5,000 saved, you're going to get really creative. Like, Saturdays I could mow lawns or, I mean, whatever, you know, and whether you're a lawnmower or an electrician or whatever it is, I love this guy. This guy is just batting 1,000 tonight. But yeah, that's set a goal and you'll meet the goal.
Yeah.
Written I do goal. Love the carrot approach because that's how I function that way. My career is like, I want the next thing. I want to grow. I want to know how I can improve. And that conveniently fuels my car carrot of I need this amount of money to get into this vehicle. Like, I've always dreamed of this. I want this or whatever. So that motivates me because otherwise it's like, what the heck am I working so hard for? Like,
I have absolutely. A car carrot of a Ferrari F50, but it's just discouraging.
It's you need binoculars to see the carrot. Doug,
and that's the problem is once you get through like a bunch of the cars, target cars, then it becomes like, okay, now this next one's going to be really a challenge. But it's nice because you're probably working on that now.
I'm getting farther away. I don't even know what to do. It's like they're using these growth hormones for vegetables now. The carrot has become so huge I can't.
Yeah. I would like to offer Matt another solution and tell him about my Lord and Savior Pentagon Federal Credit Union, who has... Credit unions typically offer the best interest rates, and if it's something that you are comfortable with, I would like to stress that. Don't be stupid. You can, well,
Dave Ramsey has a problem with this statement.
Dave Ramsey is a pie in the sky kind of dude, if you ask me.
You a Dave Ramsey guy?
Not so much necessarily the statement of PenFed, but the Lord and Savior, because I think he's maybe... would have issue with Pentagon being your Lord and Savior because I think he thinks he's kind of his own Lord and Savior of the financial community.
Yeah. A lot of his followers Dave feel Ramsey the same cult. Way. I've seen stuff about that.
I took that the total wrong way. Yes.
Agreed. I mean, also the debt thing, but, you know.
Debt can be a tool. It just depends on what you're trying to use it for.
I don't know. I don't think, yeah, I would for a 911. A 911 is such a, unless it's like you want a new GT3 RS or like a 911 ST. If your goal is just to get a 911, which could be like even a 997 or a nice 991.1, save the money and get it. Pay cash for it. It's so much more enjoyable to drive that car than it is to drive the one that's got the, you know, $1,600, $1,700. Note on it.
Yeah, but Exotic Car Hack says you should use other people's money because it doesn't cost you any money and you don't have to worry about depreciation and maintenance and you only have to make $50,000 a year and you can buy whatever you want because you just use other people's money.
There's also that. I use it as a tool and I think
I can smell the bankruptcies coming.
Well, and I think a crutch is a tool. I think we could argue that to kind of reach up maybe a bracket or a notch on the card. That's what I've always used it for. It's like, I want this thing.
Did you get loans for both of your Porsches?
You might dislike me, but I financed the entire purchase price of my 996 when I bought it at like 2% interest. I paid $800 in total interest for that car.
That's awesome.
It was I was 1 year into my career out of college and was like, I want a 911. I want it bad. I'm going to keep driving this garbage Buick. It wasn't garbage. Buick Centuries from like the early 2000s are so reliable and so comfy. I'm going to keep driving this. I want that. Finance the whole purchase price. I don't think I'd do it again. knowing what I know now.
Well, no one's getting, no one's, Joe the electrician's not getting 2%.
That's the other
anywhere.
Thing, is the interest rates are much different now. I financed a part of the other one just because I didn't want to put all the cash out because I knew I needed it for some maintenance of
I'm
both cars.
I'm not talking down on anyone that would get a loan for a car.
No, I've gotten loans for both.
I'm you know. For me personally, it just made more sense to, especially when a car is, you know, sub $50,000, which is kind of what I think we're talking about. You know, or not even sub $50,000, like sub. So whatever this guy makes in a year, whatever he's trying to get is probably like half of what he makes in a year. And that's savable, like maybe not in a year, but like in a couple years. Anyways, that's my point. But you will get your 911 and follow these excellent tips.
Yeah. Not exotic car hacks. Don't follow those tips.
Please don't.
No, no. Real tips. There is no hack in the car world. Cars cost money to own, period. There
well,
is
there
depreciation.
Was briefly, there was
there
briefly.
Maintenance.
A little bit.
That like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, which is, you know, when what they were saying
that
was like quasi plausible.
Only if you got your timing right, though.
It's
only
crazy.
If you timed
not,
it.
I would never. I don't agree
I'm
with
a
it
professional.
At all. I'm saying like for whatever reason, the weird thing that we lived in there. You could buy a 911 new, drive it for 6-8 months, sell it for $20,000 more than you paid for it, and get a Lamborghini Huracan, and then drive it for 6 months and sell it for $20,000 more than you paid for it.
But you never knew when that was going to end.
Well, it's over.
Right.
So I don't even know. You know what I mean? So this, like, as far as exotic car hacks, there are no exotic car hacks. The hack right now is buy an F40 4 years ago. And sell it now. And
so
sell
buy a DeLorean
now
so you can go back in time.
There's no, you know what I mean? That's is that a hack? Not really. You know what I mean? Because you can't do it. So I don't know.
I am a professional and I missed probably millions of dollars of upside because I sold too early during all that time because I didn't know when whatever was going to happen.
Bro, how many 911s have we owned? I mean, I had a RS America. I had every 911 that you would want for like $30,000 to $40,000, but like 15 years ago, you know what I'm saying? Like, sure, I bought all those cars when they were at their base, and then I sold them within, you know, 80 days or whatever, and I made $4,000 on this car. Woo! I crushed it. You know. Meanwhile, that one car is now $200,000.
Yes. However, I will say. What you did is a real business model.
Right.
Speculation is not. Speculation is a happenstance, a luck of timing, unless you are causing whatever is happening in the market to happen. If you are a victim of the market and you happen to be lucky on timing, that's not a sustainable business model. That's not even a business.
It is.
That's the same as GameStop.
And
or
imagine
any other.
If I bought that RS America in whatever that was, you know, 2006, 2007, 2008, and then I stored it till 2018. Bro, every seal, every, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would have needed $40,000 in service. So, like,
not to mention you needed that money, dude.
Right. And then I wouldn't have made any of the money. I don't know. There is no hack.
No, and cars are also not investments. I feel like that needs to be repeated. Folks ask us questions all the time, which, of course, we love. You know, chatting with you guys, but like, cars are not investments. I don't think we're ever going to change our stance on that.
They're not good investments.
Yeah.
They can be investments.
And I think
they are not good investments.
Your Lamborghini, like, there are certain cars, like, I think my Lotus, there's a couple cars that I have that, well, say I bought it 10 years ago and I own it now and it's doubled in value. And of course I've serviced it, but I've also driven it and gotten the joy out of it. So what you can't quantify what that number is. Like, as far as if I would have put it in the market, if I had $50,000, I put it in the market 10 years ago. Well, now it would be worth $175,000 and the car is not worth 170, but like all the experiences I've had, all the, you know, like you can't really put a price on that. So if you're okay with your $50,000 being worth $100,000, which is again less than the market, and then also deducting cam belts and, you know, bushings and all that crap, but but it is more money, then yes, it's an investment.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's
a both and, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a balance, because I think about it all the time. If I sold all my cars and put that money in the market or back into my business, it would yield a far greater return, which better than zero is, you know.
Right.
Right. But I can't do both, right? Like, I could do that and say, okay, I've got this big pile of money to do what? To reinvest, to get a bigger pile of money, to do what with? To reinvest, to get a bigger pile of money, to then die and give to somebody else, right? So what? Like, I don't know if I'm going to die at 40 or 50 or 80. And I would like to enjoy some of the fruits now, both for my own enjoyment and to share with other people, because I can't take that stuff with me. And part of it, like, yes, I want to leave a legacy, but I'd rather like enjoy a legacy with people now versus one that I will never see the fruits of.
I could not agree with you more.
But then I can't go to the other extreme and just go, YOLO, friggin', yeah, let's buy a Bugatti.
Bring out the loans, baby.
Yeah.
The loans.
Give me an F50.
Yeah. A little bit of a good... You know, good thing. I will say, if you raise your kids right and you know, like everything you said earlier, you know, pay for the, you know, make sure you got money for college, make sure you have a life insurance policy, like all these, like, sort of like save this money, do these things. But people that I have a friend, a real good example here is my E46 M3 that I have, I got from the estate of my good friend who died at 51 years old. Very much unexpectedly, and died. This guy was a penny pincher. I mean, you go out with this guy, you know he's not paying. You know what I'm saying? If you're paying, you know he's getting all the appetizers and all the stuff. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, he was miserly, and he died with like $12 million saved. But also, the way that he had it saved, almost $7 million of it got eaten up in taxes and because he didn't plan on dying at 51 years old. So like the way he had stuff structured and stuff. So, I mean, I just think you know, he didn't take none of it. Went
$7 million.
None of it went with him. All of his friends thought, man, this guy's like really cheap, you know? And like, you know, so like I 1,000% agree with you. There's a certain amount of responsibility that is incumbent upon a good citizen of, you know, the world. But like, if you raise your kids right, I mean, you know, one of my kids is now grown. He's got a great job. He's got a great, I mean, he doesn't need me to give him, you know, $1 million, you know what I'm saying? And like, I know like everything's, if I die, everything's paid for and this happens and that happens. So I'm going to drive some Ferraris and, you know, Aston Martins and have fun, because also when I'm like 30, 40, 50, not when I'm, I mean, you know, if you like live your whole life and you save and you save and you're 79 years old and you finally get that Ferrari,
you won't be able to get in it.
Bro, I'm not even like, you know, I'm in my 40s and I'm not anywhere near as sharp as I was, you know, heel and toeing and all that stuff. Just, you know, I know, you know what I mean? When I hit the tail of the dragon, I'm like, I'm winded. You know what I mean? After a couple, I don't know. I think it's have fun while you're young. Be responsible. I'm a capstone that because.
No, I think that is something that has been, it's something that I've ascribed to. And I'm at the point now where me and my friends are watching some of our family members and some of our parents go through the stage where they finally thought they could do something. Yeah. And you never know what's going to happen. There's medical issues, the financial, the job, whatever it is, there's always something in the way. And it's like, if you don't enjoy some of the fruits of your labor when you're younger, if you can,
you got to,
it's kind of, you're gambling in a different way, because you might have all the money when you're 60, but you can't drive a stick anymore because of some accident you were in or some physical ailment or something. Like, I
highly recommend being responsible, but also doing the fun, having the fun when you're young.
There's an old parable, and not just for yourself, but generosity as well. Generosity, I think, is, well, not I think, is way more enjoyed when you're alive than when you're dead, right? And it's great to leave money to a foundation or whatnot, but it's analogous to the story I heard. It's probably not true. It's just a story, but it may have been true, of this groundskeeper at a cemetery, and somebody kept coming and leaving flowers on the grave. of somebody they loved, and he made some comment to them about, like, you know, they can't appreciate it, and never saw that person again. And then he found out that they had taken his advice to heart, and like, why am I leaving flowers for a dead person when I could go buy the same flowers for somebody that's alive and see their face and see their enjoyment and impact their life? And so that's kind of how I think of it more, is like, yes, I want to drive a Lamborghini now because I can't when I'm dead, but also, like, what can I share with people now that is reciprocating? And I get that benefit of altruism, of seeing the joy on their face, and you know, sharing with charities. Like, yes, I could stack it all up and have some giant pile, but at what point do you divest? At what point do you say enough is enough? Or does death beat you there, right?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of people dying real young, you know, these last few years. And it definitely, I mean, I think it's been a reality check for a lot of us that, you know, this whole, you know, scrimp and save, particularly Dave Ramsey now has been mentioned four times. But, you know, his whole thing is like, no loans, pay the house off, no fun, you know, drive a crappy car, don't have, you know, no. But
In fairness, his mantra is no fun while you have debt. Once you have paid the debt off, moderate the fun with everything else, yeah, with investing.
Realistically,
which I agree with, because debt can cause stress. Debt can actually rob that enjoyment of what you're trying to accomplish.
But if you're 25 right now, and the crappiest house that you can even think of is $475,000.
Go finance that Porsche from Switch Cars.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
You need to visit
Pan
Doug.
Pan Fed.
For sure. I'm serious. Because realistically, like, and it just keeps getting worse. And the interest rates for houses are like 8%. So, like, if you want a GT3, you know.
Let's go.
All right. On that note, we're running. We've run out of time, so we're going to go to the props and flops, and we'll try to do some tip talk afterwards. So if you've been saving your questions or asking them throughout the show, we will address those afterwards. But this will wrap up the regularly recorded segment of our show for you audio listeners. So the props and flops of the week are brought to you by Switch Cars.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at the newly renovated switchcars.com. And our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory is
2002 Porsche 911 Carrera 2 in rainforest green over natural brown.
That's my
pretty
pick.
Much a one of one color combination.
So
65,000 miles LN IMS bearing upgrade done in 2019. So it might need it again.
What's the price?
We're asking $40,000. But if you mention discount code SWITCHCAST when you call in, you get $1,000 discount, which somebody did email about a Boxster today. From the podcast, and I told my team, I said,
watch out for that. If you want a 996, this is 100% the 996. This color combo.
It makes me, I have a dark teal over gray, and this still makes me salivate a little bit. I look a little longingly.
Is way better than the Savannah beige.
No.
I thought he was going to say Savannah beige is not aging well.
Savannah beige kind of looks dark.
The problem with Savannah beige is every single car had it.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of cars had it, and that kind of that's a good car.
A flop of the week is news. This comes to us from Renlist, as reported by Road and Track. Let's see. A stock Porsche 911 Carrera S got an $800 fine via a decibel meter in New York City because it violated the Stop Spreading the Noise Act. That's right. They have decibel meters placed throughout the city, and anything over 85 decibels, which is like, that's like a pretty lame church service, is 85 decibels. I mean, that's not even trying. This was a stock 911 Carrera S, no exhaust modifications, nothing. They got an $800 fine in the mail. The owner tried to fight this, had independent decibel meter checked, whatever. Fought it, and city said, nope, sorry, we win, so you have to pay it. And let's see, if that was a first offense, the fine increases for repeat offenders up to $2,500. Good analogy here in the article. To put that in perspective, the maximum fine for speeding in New York is $600, and that's for going more than 30 miles over the limit. So you can do quote-unquote reckless driving, or you could just be loud, and being loud costs you more.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think we might be focusing on the wrong thing?
Yeah, Democrat run city. Is that what you're talking about?
No. I'm talking about the... Tim's trying to get spicy. I'm talking about the fact that speeding is less of a fine than a stock exhaust. What's this guy supposed to do?
Buy an EV. That's what he's supposed to do.
That is what it's... Yeah.
That's it.
Get out of here.
That's it. The Peanut Gallery says, what about the Harleys? Well, they're not dumb enough to ride in New York City, I think. Come on.
There's that.
I don't know who would want to drive their Porsche in New York City for that matter. But anyway, yeah, this is a bad precedent. We're going down a odd dystopian road here with this. The prop of the week, Pete's Custom Coach Building sent this to me. Thank you. Ameritraf/Sonazine on Instagram. There's a really cool video out there. They created a sauna, a wood burning sauna, out of a 90s Lincoln Town Car limousine.
Oh, this sounds amazing.
That is it's awesome. Pretty awesome. The car runs and drives, and the back is a sauna. It's hot in there.
We need to get this to our friend Bailey in Texas. I think he would love
our friend Bailey. Yeah. Put the longhorns on the front. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been thinking, this is a little bit of an inside joke, but I'll preface it. So there's a place called the Schwitz in Cleveland. Those of you from Detroit or New York or Los Angeles or whatever may also be familiar with that, as Yiddish for sweat, but it's where you go and sweat. I think that the names go well together. This 90s limo would be a great place for a Schwitz cast.
Oh.
Yeah. So if the owner wants to reach out to us and have a special episode filmed from the back of the limo, I think we could, that would be in order.
It's getting hot.
It's getting hot in here. Anyway, it is getting hot in here. Stick around, live viewers, for Tip Talk. For the rest of you, thank you for joining us. Thank you to my co-host, Tim Neely. You can check him out on YouTube at Tim's Enthusiast. At Tim's Enthusiast's Garage.
Yeah.
Yep. Say that five times fast. Thank you to our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Thank you to our interim producer and banterer, Tyler Sanders. I almost called you Tyler Huffnagel.
Might as well be tonight. I'm just less pretty.
Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream the full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 8 p.m. with a very special return guest as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.